Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we're going to talk with author Bonnie Moore, who is a semi-retired attorney, accountant, management consultant, and Golden Girls Network's founder. Her first nonfiction book, How to Start a Golden Girl Home, earned widespread media coverage. She's an avid traveler who's explored remote corners of the world, from archaeological digs in France to a safari in South Africa. And in 2017, she retired to Utah to be near family and pursue her dream of writing, resulting in her debut novel, Buried Bones. Here's kind of the tagline to Buried Bones. One dead body, four suspects, one group of retired amateur sleuths, a small town in Utah that wants its secrets kept buried. We'll talk about Buried Bones during this hour. Bonnie Moore, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So you are in Utah at this point, I think, right?
Yes, I live in Salt Lake now.
I want to take you through your very, very interesting biography a bit here at the first part of the program. Then we'll get to Buried Bones and the process of writing. Because as you say, a lot of people have a book in them, but not everybody pulls that out of themselves. Maybe that's where I'll start just briefly. What would you suggest to people? They got a book but been rummaging around in their head for a long time. How do you get started?
Well, I started taking writing classes. I've been taking writing classes off and on for 20 some odd years, keeping that interest alive. And Buried Bones actually started as a classroom project in a writing class 5 years ago.
And you've said in other interviews that you learned how to write the book by writing it.
Yes. It took me 5 years because the first draft was awful. And everybody needs to understand that the first draft is always awful. And you can't get discouraged by that. You just keep working at it. You keep plugging at it. I had an editor that we went through the book three different times. And then somebody else critiqued it and I made some more changes. And then I just started doing a lot of editing myself. So it changed a lot. I would hate to go back and look at that first draft now.
Yeah, right. What's that process like working with an editor? You said you worked with an editor and then you became your own editor.
I think everybody needs an editor, no matter what, because an editor has a different point of view and the editor can help make the writing more exciting. It was probably the best thing I did was to hire an editor. I thought I had a pretty good command of language, and she was much better at it. She also helped me to develop a better outline, if you will, consolidate stuff, get rid of stuff that really didn't work. So the whole process of understanding how to develop a plot was something I had to learn.
Was there something about writing a novel that you felt maybe was going to be easier and turned out to be hard, and vice versa? What surprised you in the writing process?
Well, I suppose if you're a good reader, if you like to read, you think it's easy to sit down and write a book, and it's not. It depends on what you want to do with it. But the most important thing, I think, is to take out extra words and extra, where you go off on a tangent someplace and really focus on what is the storyline, what is the plot, what enhances the story and the plot, and keep it tight. And that's what an editor will help you do. I'm actually starting to write some blogs for my website, which talks about this whole editing process and how valuable it is. Some of these self-published books, you can tell, have not been edited well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tell me about nonfiction versus fiction. I guess nonfiction seems a little more straightforward. You wrote How to Start a Golden Girls Home, nonfiction, right?
The Golden Girls book started because I was actually teaching an online class, or I had these ideas. I had a Golden Girls home for 10 years. As a result of a divorce, I ended up with a 5-bedroom house, and I didn't want to sell it, so I started taking in roommates, and that developed into this Golden Girls idea. And then I started teaching these classes on different aspects of it. And so I would have to write out what my lesson plan for the week was, and it turned into a book. So
It came from lesson plans.
yeah, it was, I was taking my experiences, and there are many books out there about roommate situations, and I made this one a little bit different. Not so much the legal landlord-tenant kind of relationship, but more the personal relationship where you're living together as a group, and there are challenges.
And then oftentimes unexpected, right? It's
Yes.
you become widowed or divorced and whatever, and you had this big house, right?
Yes.
What are some of the challenges?
Personality differences,
Ah, yes.
cleanliness differences. I had a situation, my very first roommate, in fact, had been there 2 or 3 months, and her son was in the hospital and he died suddenly. So I was dealing with somebody who was going through massive grief. It was her only child. You have those kind of situations. Oftentimes women came to live in my house because they were in the middle of some kind of transition. And so sometimes those transitions got in the way. So it's life. Things happen. And especially when you're someone who, you're accustomed to your own home, your own lifestyle, and suddenly you are in a house full of other people who have other customs and lifestyles. It's a challenge. The best thing is when you know the people beforehand. And even that's a challenge.
It's still a need. I think the book's still selling, right? So people are
Oh
still
yeah.
picking that
Oh
up.
yeah. The rents keep going up.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Bonnie Moore. She's author of her first novel. It's out and available now, Buried Bones, a Maggie Anderson mystery. It's planned as a first of a series. We'll get into talking about that. So I promised people the beginning we'd get into your very interesting biography. I want to do that now. Your biography says you spent your youth moving around a lot. I get your dad was in the Air Force.
Yes, he ended up at Hillfield in Utah, and then he retired here. That's how I ended up in Utah.
Okay. But before that, I guess you lived in Colorado, Boston, Texas, Nova Scotia. That's interesting.
No, Newfoundland.
Oh,
My
Newfoundland.
first
Okay.
memories of life come from living in Newfoundland.
Oh, really? Really?
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of, I mean, to me it's exotic. I guess you were there.
Yeah.
So your dad ended up at Hill. So you I think you graduated from Davis High, right? And and Weber State.
Yes.
So at a certain point you decided no, Utah's not for me. What did you do then?
I went to San Francisco.
So this is I'm reading here, Haight-Ashbury, and lived in a commune.
Yes.
So the whole I guess the whole was this during the hippie period?
Yeah, it was the in the early 70s.
What was that like?
Amazing. San Francisco was fabulous at that time. It's changed an awful lot, but it was, and I went from being, by then I was married, divorced, and had 2 kids, and the kids stayed with their dad for a while before I took them out to California. But I went out there. I was a small town housewife, and I went to San Francisco and moved into a commune. So it was a major change in lifestyle.
I imagine, yeah.
And It was still and I live very close to Golden Gate Park, and we would go over to Golden Gate Park, I mean, it was quite an experience.
I don't want to gloss over this. At some point, you were a race car driver.
Oh
I'm
yeah, that was when
reading.
I would back up in when I first got married. I married somebody who worked, and we both worked at Wood Motor Company in Ogden, but they aren't there anymore. But Wood Motor was sponsoring a race car, a 442, back when they were making those. And I had a TR3. And so we bored out the engine, and I raced it, and I won a trophy. Down, it was in Salt Lake a long time ago. I'm sure they don't have that racetrack anymore, but yeah, I raced my little car.
It seems like a through
Nowadays, I'm
yeah.
a careful driver.
You're a careful driver. Good.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure your family's appreciative of that. It seems like a through line through your whole bio here is you've got an adventurous personality. You're not afraid to try new things.
I think that's true.
So I'm reading here you did some work for Werner Erhard, the founder of EST. I should mention you got your degree was accounting.
Yes.
So what was that like working with him?
It was very interesting. He was a very strong personality. I worked. He had a couple of like subsidiary organizations, and the company that I worked for was a technical startup, and I was the CFO. He was very demanding, but things operated well because he was demanding. I find fault in some ways, but he also had some good things to teach people.
You've done a lot of traveling. Is that something you always wanted to do?
Yes.
So let me just read off in the bio here. Ireland, France, Russia, Germany, Canada, Mexico, Argentina, Uruguay, England, just to name a few.
Peru. Oh, my last trip was to Peru.
Oh, to Peru. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think you gain by traveling? Some people don't. Other people love it. What do you gain from traveling?
I think you get a different perspective on the world. There are lots of different people who speak different languages and have different cultures. And to me, it's fascinating to go into another culture, even if I don't speak the language, and try to get along.
What's the most interesting place you've been? Is it I guess maybe the most recent place, or is there an especially interesting place you've been?
Well, several of the trips have been interesting. I try to do interesting trips. One of my earlier trips was the trip to France, where I dug up a skeleton that was 1,000 years old. I joined an archaeology expedition, and we were digging up an old graveyard in South Central France. They were building a freeway through, and they uncovered this church and graveyard, and the whole construction was stopped for 5 years while this archaeology project was going on. And I was there the last 2 weeks of it. That one was really interesting. I did another archaeology trip in England. We worked on part of Hadrian's Wall. Another trip I actually went around the world. I ended up going through Russia on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. I went from Tokyo to London on the railroad. And this was in the late 80s, when Russia was more open to having visitors. Well, the last trip it was in Peru. I worked on a research boat on the Amazon River. My job was to count dolphins in the river. It was a research project, and I joined up and counted dolphins in the river. So that's the kind of thing I like to do.
Not just travel, but do other
To
things
do
while you're
things.
traveling. So you established an accounting practice, did that for several years, then you decided to go to law school. What why did you decide to do that?
Well, first of all, I worked my way through college as a legal secretary in Ogden and learned a lot about the law. And my boss wanted me to go to law school, but I was tired of going to school. So several years later, I decided to go to law school, and it was because I got involved in a class action lawsuit, and it was a constitutional issue, and it was a really fascinating situation, and I was tired of practicing accounting, and so I decided to go to law school.
I guess the a lot of the students were younger than you. How was that?
Yeah, I was the oldest one in the class.
Yeah.
I was 50 when I graduated.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
So a big change in your career at that age. Then you went to Washington, D.C. What were you tell me about that work.
I ended up working for a CPA firm in DC. Well, first of all, the fun part of it was I drove from San Francisco to DC by myself. I had a 15-year-old two-seater sports car, and I went across the country by myself, which was an adventure. But I got there, I ended up with this job with the CPA firm, and I was like a, my title was senior consultant, and I was project manager on projects dealing with all sorts of things that were a little bit outside of accounting, but they came to our firm. Investigation types of situations. I had one project that I worked on for 10 years where the government managed some fiduciary money, and the whole situation was out of control, and it was in court, and to get it out of court, they had to clean things up, and so that was my project for 10 years. I did another project where I uncovered fraud in a small agency. All sorts of things. Sometimes it was the records were so bad nobody knew what the situation was. I had to straighten it out. Sometimes it was an investigation. I had all kinds of different things. It was interesting. It was interesting.
Well, let's take a brief break. We'll come back, talk about, we'll get into talking about buried bones. We're talking with Bonnie Moore, who's author of, she has a nonfiction book that's still out selling, How to Start a Golden Girls Home, and now a novel, a mystery, Buried Bones, a Maggie Anderson mystery. It's the first of a planned series, and it's set in Utah. We're talking with Bonnie Moore. We'll have more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Bonnie Moore. Her new book is a murder mystery. It's called Buried Bones. It's set in Utah. And Bonnie Moore, after having lived in various places around the world, had lived as a young person in Utah, graduated from Davis High and Weber State University. She's now back in Utah, and this book is set in Utah. I guess at a certain point you're living in Washington, D.C., Bonnie Moore, you decided to retire to Utah. I guess family out here? So that's why.
My son lives here now. I raised my kids in San Francisco, but when he got married, he moved back here. He's a bicyclist, and he felt that Utah would be a better place to bicycle than San Francisco.
Yeah, I guess to be really serious about it, you got the elevation and a lot of different terrain. So yeah,
Yes.
so we talked about this at the beginning of the program. You decided, yeah, I want to write a novel. So you took this class, University of Utah. Did you have an idea in mind? I guess the assignment was to write a book or to write out an idea.
Well, the class was how to write a mystery, how to write a murder mystery. It was taught through the extension program at the university by a Utah author. And so everyone in the class had to develop a story idea as we went through the classes. It was like, a couple of months. And so I had to come up with something, and somebody recently, shortly before that, somebody had mentioned to me about a pioneer cabin that his family had inherited up in the mountains above east of Ogden. And I thought, well, that would make an interesting site for a story. And so then suddenly I had to have a story idea. So I said, all right, I'll write a story around this cabin. And it needed to be a murder mystery, so I had to have a dead body. And as we went through the class, we would write different pieces of it. Each person would take their story idea, and like one class, we were writing dialogue. And so we had to write a scene with dialogue in it and descriptions and things like this. So I just started piecing together a story. And when the class was over, by the time the class was over, we were into COVID. And so this became my COVID project. And so I stayed home during COVID and wrote. So I always wanted to write a book, and so here was my opportunity, and so I did it.
So, the lead character is a retired prosecutor named Maggie Anderson. She's vacationing in the mountains east of Ogden and learns about the discovery of this body. And so she takes this on. I guess inevitably some of Maggie would be you, right? And some would not be. Which parts did you take from you?
Well, let me see. I made her older and retired, and I made her from DC. I had to give her a reason for retiring in Utah. And now I was never a prosecutor, so that was a big difference. She's been married three times. I've been married three times. She drives a car like mine. But I found it easier to bring in some attributes that I knew about, so I knew how she would be as a person. Or I mean, she's different, but I know how she thinks. I have to know how she thinks. So I made her sort of like me, but with some different background, some similar background.
And I guess maybe she has some qualities you wish you had, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, she's better looking than I am.
There you go. Yeah.
Always.
you
And she's
you
thinner than I am. She's athletic.
right right you can you can put that in. You're the author. Yeah.
Yes.
Tell me about Robert Parsons.
Robert Parsons is the role that he plays is her sidekick. He helps her. He's a local guy from the same area. He knows people. He's easy to get along with. In many ways, kind of her opposite, but he grounds her. He kind of likes her also, so he's helping her out because he wants to get closer to her.
You have a couple other kind of main characters. These are all going to feature, I expect, in the whole series, right?
Yes, All four of them.
Yeah. So Gwen Simons, tell me about her.
She's a retired nurse who came to Utah from Chicago.
Yeah. And Pete,
I haven't modeled her after anyone.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Just an inventor. Yeah. Peter Matthew.
Peter is a retired. He came to Utah to ski in Park City. He's a quiet, studious medical researcher, and he was with the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and he lives in Park City.
Yeah. Then you have this powerful family, right, in this town, the Stevenson family.
Yes. I have not modeled them after anyone either.
Right. I guess the sheriff or the prosecutor, he's nearing retirement, doesn't really want to rock the boat too much, and wants to tread carefully around this family.
Yes.
Tell me about, to flesh out the characters, you have to know and demonstrate their motivations, right? There's a real emotional component to writing any fiction, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you fit that all together? By the way, do you outline the whole mystery before you start writing?
I did not outline Buried Bones. I've developed a style that seems to be working, where I will outline the first three or four chapters, and then I will start writing the first draft, and then I'll get to a point where I'm stuck, and then I'll outline four more, and I'll draft those, and then outline four more. I mean, I know where I'm going with the story. I have the story in my head, but I don't outline it in detail because it keeps changing. These characters keep doing things I didn't expect them to do, and they say things I didn't expect. And so when I tried outlining, things kept changing. Because I just allow the characters to talk.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm doing in the second book. I'm up to about chapter 12, I think it is. And I'm doing that, and it's working pretty well. I'll get it out of my head. I'll get stuck. I'll outline three or four more, and I'll write that and see what happens, and then I'll outline more. And I know where it's going. I know the big points, but the small points I don't know yet.
That's interesting, and I've heard that from other authors. You start in, you create the characters, and then sometimes they'll tell you where they're going.
Absolutely. If you just kind of let it go and flow, go with the flow, it's surprising what you come up with sometimes.
You said, I was reading an interview, you said there's two levels to a story. The first, the level of the story, I guess the plot, right? And then there's the level of how the people in the story, the characters, transform. Tell me about that. Is that what you were getting at? Just let them tell you?
Yes, and I think in a good story, you want transformation in your main characters. You want them to, Maggie starts out feeling a lack of confidence because she had a traumatic situation with her job in DC, and she resigned and she felt she lost her confidence, if you will. She comes to Utah. She says she's never going to do this again. She meets this guy who needs representation, and she says, "Oh, I got to take care of this," you know. And so she jumps in, but she's afraid to jump in because of the confidence thing. She's afraid to be responsible for this guy's life because he's up on a murder charge, and so she gains her confidence back slowly as she works on the case and uncovers the real murderer of the victim in Buried Bones. So she transforms. She walks it. She's a flawed character. And so you watch that character dealing with her flaws while she's dealing with the plot. And that, I think that makes a better story. Because nobody's perfect, and people tend to like a flawed character and watch that flawed character overcome whatever it is.
It makes them more human, right? We can
Yes.
relate. We can relate. Yeah. By the way, do you read murder mysteries? Did you
All the time.
okay, yeah. So I guess that could be intimidating if you read some of the great writers, or you could get some lessons from those
I
novels.
try to make lessons out of it. I often outline books that I've read that I like. I go back and I'll outline it, and so I'm studying the plot and studying the character development. So I've got a bunch of them, but I've got a whole file on my computer of these outlines of books that I've written that I've read.
What are some of your favorites?
Depends on when you ask.
Right.
I've recently read what's her name? Kirsten the name escapes me. She's got a couple of books on the bestseller list right now. She recently wrote a book called The Women, and it's a book about the women nurses who served in Vietnam. Kirsten's, I would have to look it up on my Kindle. The name escapes me, but once I discovered her, I read three or four of her books. So I will run across somebody I really like and read three or four of their books. There's always the classic, P.D. James and Agatha Christie and some of those early mysteries, which are really instructive sometimes. So I don't always read mysteries. I mean, I like to read things that I like to read books that have won awards or are on the bestseller list and things like that. I like to read books that are well written, hoping that I'll learn something from them.
That's interesting. Yeah, that as a writer, right? As just a pure reader, you just read for the enjoyment or whatever it is. But as a writer, you say you physically outline some of these books. So you're also, I guess, you're enjoying it as a reader, right? But you're also learning how those writers are doing it.
Yeah, I mean, you can read all these books on how to write, and it says do this and do this and do this. But you really learn the point if you go find a book that is well written and see how somebody else has done it.
Yeah. So again, this interview I was reading that you gave, you mentioned that you've been a lawyer and an accountant and now an author. So I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that. So you do a lot of writing as a lawyer, I would expect. I don't know if you do much writing as an accountant, but what are the differences? And then as an author now. That's a whole different style.
When I was working in DC, I always had to write a report on the project that I did. The final report that went to the client. And hold on a second. Okay. So that was business typewriting. And when I was in law school, I actually wrote some legal briefs and things like that. I kind of became disillusioned with courtroom type of legal work. But I did write some briefs. And there's a very particular style of writing. And you have to be succinct in legal writing. I think my style now reflects some of that succinctness. In the reports that I used to write, I had to be, I was speaking to high-level management in whatever the project was. Most of the reports went to higher-level politicians and managers and things like that. So it had to be a very professional report. And when I first started writing those reports, my managing partner, who was supervising them, edited me a lot. I had to learn a lot about this business writing. But it also makes you very aware of all those extra words that need to come out. And writing actually gets stronger when you take out the extra words. Now, lawyers have to think, evidence, strategy, what's the legal interpretation? It's a very fact-oriented situation where writers, I think, need to deal much more with the emotional side of things, the human element of things. So there's a big difference there. I think being a writer is much more fun.
Yeah, I would imagine. I would imagine, yes. Well, let's take another break. We'll come back with a final segment with Bonnie Moore. She's out with a novel. It's planned as the first of a series of Maggie Anderson mysteries. And this one's called Buried Bones. It's out and available now. We'll have more of Bonnie Moore following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Utah resident Bonnie Moore, author now of a book called Buried Bones. It's a Maggie Anderson mystery. It's the first in the series, and it is set in Utah, small town in Utah. So, Bonnie Moore, this is a do you base this town on anything, or is this a totally a fictitious town?
It's a fictitious town. I think people will recognize the setting east of Ogden, but it's a fictitious town. There's a town, and then there's a village near the cabin where this pioneer cabin that Robert's family inherited. But yes, it's totally fictitious.
Tell me about setting this book in Utah. I guess there's a, I don't know, a tension or interesting conflicts, maybe not the right word. Maggie Anderson is from back east, right? And she's vacationing in Utah, encounters this murder here in small town Utah. So she's encountering, I guess, the culture here as well.
She actually retires in Utah. She's been in Utah a couple of years.
Okay. So yeah, tell me about Utah as a setting. I guess you could have set this anywhere, I suppose.
Yes, one of the underlying themes is basically a prejudice against some people. People, when someone's accused of a crime, sometimes the people, the local people, will have a prejudice against that person, and they will want them convicted regardless of the evidence. And so this is a situation where there's no real evidence against the guy. The small town has a prejudice against him, and they want him convicted. And so that's what she's fighting more than anything else. There's this underlying prejudice that she has to overcome. And that happens a lot, I think, in legal situations.
Do you do backstories for your characters, or do they just kind of you do work it through as you're writing?
I have an outline of Maggie's life that I'm going to that will, yes, I've got some back definitely got backstory on her. I've got a pretty good backstory on Robert. The other two characters, not so much. But the main characters, I have backstory.
Tell me about the process of getting published. It's not a sure thing, right? You can write a book, but getting it published is a whole different thing. How did you get this one published?
I used a very reputable publisher in South Carolina that it is it's a hybrid publisher. Basically like self-publishing, but they also do marketing. I tried for a couple of years. I had one publisher interested and then they turned it down. I said, I don't have time for this. So I found someone and because I've had enough business experience, I'm handling a lot of the marketing myself. I'm gathering people around me. I'm doing what I have to do. I made a success out of Golden Girls just because I took on I took an aggressive marketing stance, and so that's what I'm doing.
I guess you would have learned some lessons from that experience, right? The Golden Girls, getting that published.
Yes.
Yeah. And then these days, it's not just the print. You've got to get it. I guess you got to get it on Amazon or another platform.
Well, the publisher did all that for
Oh,
me.
they did. They did that for you.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it's.
What was interesting is they were also supposed to do the cover, and I didn't like the cover that they did for me. So I took it back and I went out and got my own cover done.
All right, yeah, you have to be assertive, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I and they I was talking to the my project manager at the publisher, and he complimented me on the cover. He didn't like the idea that I was going to toss out there the cover they did for me, but he said that he likes what I came up with. We had a long delay because of it, but I like what happened.
So what is your advice to, I guess, aspiring authors, someone that that has a book in their head or has that ambition?
Take classes. There are lots of classes out there. Keep working on it. Find a writing partner. I didn't have a writing partner on this one, but a number of years ago, I wrote another manuscript, which I would still like to clean up and publish. But I had a writing partner on that one, and we would sit and do dialogue together, for instance. But it was very useful to have someone who encouraged me, and I would encourage him. You have to stick with your dream.
Yeah. Oh, finally, tell me about the next book in this series.
The basic legal issue with Buried Bones is accusing an innocent person. The legal issue in the second book deals with self-defense. Someone kills somebody, and the question is whether or not it's self-defense. I'm still working on the plot, so I'm not going to say an awful lot about it, but it's actually an adolescent who kills somebody. And so they get involved in the whole juvenile court system, the juvenile court systems are usually not very effective. And so we're going to have a lot of frustration with the process because the juvenile court system really wants to punish kids more than help them. And so that's one of the underlying themes of the second book.
Well, that's book two, and so to prepare for book two, read book one. That's out and available. That's called Buried Bones. It's a Maggie Anderson mystery, and we've been talking with the author, Bonnie Moore. Bonnie Moore, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.